The screen opens up, revealing static. The static transforms into the text HBO Entertainment against a black background. Jules sleeps curled on her side, the curve of her ribs visible as she inhales softly in the blue darkness. The light outside the window warms to golden across her pale skin. Rue smiles and bends to kiss the slope of her hip, then crawls over her and places kisses up the side of her body until she reaches her cheek. Jules stirs underneath her. She rolls over to kiss Rue back.
Oh, wait, don't kiss me. I just woke up.
What? It doesn't matter. They're good luck kisses.
Oh, fuck. Wait, my presentation. Wait, what time is
you're
it?
You're good. It's 8.
Okay, you're good. I'm so fucking nervous. I can't fuck this up.
Jules wraps her arms around Rue as they kiss again. She pulls back with a smile.
Want me to walk you to school?
I think I want to listen to music and clear my head. I love you.
Rue brushes their noses together.
I love you too.
Rue leans in to give Jules long, lingering kisses as her hand comes up to cup Jules' face. Rue smiles gently and pecks the tip of Jules' nose, then her cheeks.
Go.
Jules rises off the bed as Rue settles onto the pillow. She gazes at Jules' naked back as she moves into the open bathroom. Jules shakes out her long blonde hair, then gathers it into a ponytail. She glances back at Rue in the mirror as she brushes her teeth. Rue observes Jules for a moment, then slowly sits up and gets off the bed. She smiles as she approaches Jules from behind, then encircles her arms around her thin waist. She rests her chin in the crook of Jules' neck.
You know, whatever happens today, I'm proud of you.
Jules grins around her toothbrush and presses her cheek to Rue's as they embrace. Pushing back the lace curtains, Rue climbs onto the windowsill and gazes outside while Jules wanders over to a clothes rack. Jules pulls on an oversized button-up shirt, splattered with blue paint, and black pants. She glances at Rue as she does up her buttons and smiles. Rue dances towards her, then gives her a kiss. Jules flips through a series of fashion sketches. Rue sits cross-legged on the bed and gathers them into a beige art portfolio that she and Jules zip up from opposite sides. Jules grabs Rue in a twirl and kisses her forehead.
Oh, I can't believe it. It's everything I dreamed of.
I love you.
Rue closes the door slowly after Jules. Her hand slips off the lock as she peeks over her shoulder. Her smile fades as she strides over to the mattress and slips her hand beneath it to pull out a baggie of pills. She picks up a book off the side table, then opens the drawer and takes out a broken pen and cash. She pops the pen between her lips as she saunters over to the bathroom, then drops onto the edge of the bath. She sets her paraphernalia out on the toilet seat, then uncrumples the plastic bag of pills. She grabs the pill off the floor, then sets it under a dollar bill on the book and snags a green lighter. Her messy bun shudders as she pounds the pills with the edge of her lighter. She takes the hollow pen and puts it to her nose. Polaroid of Rue and Jules leaning into each other and smiling sits in the corner of the mirror. Now in her maroon sweatshirt, Rue wipes her nose and gazes at her reflection. She puts up her hood and walks out. Ali sits at a brown vinyl diner booth alone and drips syrup over a plate of pancakes. Rue saunters over and slides into the bench across from him. He cuts into a stack of pancakes as he glances at her. She sits hunched.
Look, Ali, I know you don't believe me, but I'm doing really good, actually.
He raises his eyebrows.
Is that so?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it could suddenly shit flip and get super dark. Yeah. I mean, it could, but I feel like I've found this, like, amazing balance where I'm, like, happy and healthy and I'm not, like, looking to anybody else for that happiness, you know? Fucking Jules.
She fidgets with her straw.
Like, I was, like, putting way too much of my emotional well-being in her hands, you know, without ever, like, talking about it or saying it. Yeah, especially the way I was fucking making plans for the rest of our life and shit. And just...
Brow furrowed, she takes a sip of orange juice.
And I look back at that, and I was like, why the fuck did I do that? That's fucking crazy. Weird. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just, like, made her the point. But she's, like, not the point. I'm the point, you know?
The point is your sobriety.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And like, my general overall well-being.
Which starts with your sobriety.
He eyes her as she frowns deeply and nods.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, like, finding an emotional balance, you know?
You just said you found an amazing balance.
I did. I have. I mean, I'm not perfect, you know, so I'm sane, though. I'm saner. I'm making sane decisions.
Rue, you're high.
I feel like you're not listening to what I'm saying.
Rue, I don't think you're listening to what you're saying.
I feel like that's physically impossible.
To what? Talk some bullshit?
She grins and looks away.
You know, that's what, like, I don't understand about the world. Because, like, there is tons of people who, you know, drink and do drugs, and sometimes their life is good. And sometimes life is bad, you know? It's fucking life. There's ups and downs to this shit. But, I mean, whether you believe me or not, I'm, like, I'm good.
Yeah, you said that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm doing a bunch of shit. I'm just taking a little bit of weed and taking some pills that were prescribed to me.
My point is, it's not gonna last.
Yeah, well, neither do my moods when I'm sober.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not saying you're a paragon of mental health. You've got your issues, and you're gonna be struggling with those issues for the rest of your life. That's a fact. The problem is that you look at sobriety as a weakness in the face of those issues, and what I'm saying is, sobriety is your greatest weapon.
Yeah.
Her gaze grows distant as she chews.
Ollie, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Like, for love, if I say some dark shit, you're not gonna report me to the state or something.
Rue, I'm not a guidance counselor. I'm just a crackhead who's trying to do a little good on this earth before I die.
you're a trip, man.
What were you gonna say?
Nah, it doesn't matter. Right, stupid.
Come on. What were you gonna say?
Nah.
Say it.
I don't wanna.
Grimacing, she shakes her head, then scratches at her forehead quickly and stares down at the table.
When I'm clean, you know, when I'm present, like a part of this world, I don't just think about relapsing. It's darker than that. And you can say that sobriety is my greatest weapon, but to tell you the truth, drugs are probably the only reason I haven't killed myself.
Her dark eyes flicker up to search Ali's face. He gazes back at her steadily, then nods and raises his eyebrows.
Now we're talking. Now you're being real. Now you're being honest. Because this whole bullshit about being a functioning drug addict, about finding balance, that ain't true. That's a lie.
It's not a lie.
It's a lie whether you know it or not, but more importantly, I don't give a fuck to hear it.
She rubs her forehead.
Yeah, whatever, man.
Hey, whatever, man. Yeah. Whatever, man. Listen, young blood. I was shooting dope before your mama's egg dropped. I've lived a whole motherfucking life to get to this diner to sit across from your arrogant ass so that you ever whatever me. You're 17. You don't know shit. You think you're hard? I'm harder. You think you're tough? I'm tougher. You got clean and want to kill yourself? Same motherfucking story here. You want to know why? You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because you don't know how to live life. You don't have the tools. You're too busy running around trying to bullshit everybody into thinking you're hard. You don't give a fuck when the reality you give so much of a fuck you can't even bear to be alive. So guess what? New rule. No more wasting my motherfucking time. You want to use, use, but the least you can do is be honest. Own that shit.
Rue's bottom lip pouts as she nods.
You feel me? Mm-hmm. Why'd you relapse?
I don't know. Can't stop my mind from racing.
Racing on what?
Everything.
Hey, Get specific.
She presses her hand against her cheek and shrugs. Shaking her head, she glances at him briefly, then shrugs again.
All the things I remember and all the things I wish I didn't.
His brow furrows as he nods.
Okay. I get it. Why don't you call me?
She smirks and widens her eyes pointedly.
Honestly, I wasn't really trying not to relapse.
No. Yeah, man, okay. Where'd you get the drugs?
I had some pills for emergency purposes.
Fuck. So you never stood a chance.
Her grin fades as she looks downward.
Nope.
Ali nods to himself and glances away. He peers at her from the corner of his eye.
Do you want to get clean?
He avoids Rue's gaze as she presses her lips together and shakes her head.
No.
You sure?
Hesitating, she shrugs her shoulders slightly and nods.
Yeah.
She screws her lips to the side and looks down. Eyes far away, Ali nods to himself.
I get it. I get it.
I fucked up.
Well, you don't want to get clean? Yeah, of course it's fucked up.
I'm a piece of shit, huh?
Yeah, piece of shit. All right, but here's the silver lining. You're not a drug addict because you're a piece of shit. You're a piece of shit because you're a drug addict. You follow? Okay, all right, what I'm saying is, you didn't come out of the womb an evil person. You, Rue, came out of the womb a beautiful baby girl who, unbeknownst to her, had a couple of wires crossed. So when you try drugs for the first time, it sets something off your brain that's beyond your control. And it isn't a question of willpower. It's not about how strong you are. You've been fighting a losing game since the first day you got high. So you can destroy your life. You could fuck your little sister's head up. You could abuse and torture and take for granted your mama and sit here and look me in the eye and say, as calm as can be, as cool as a cucumber, I'ma keep using drugs.
Huh. He points at her meaningfully.
That is the disease of addiction. It is a degenerative disease. It is incurable. It is deadly. And it's no different than cancer. And you got it. Why? Look at the draw. But the hardest part of having the disease of addiction, aside from having the disease, is that no one in the world sees it as a disease. They see you as selfish. They see you as weak. They see you as cruel. They see you as destructive. They think, why should I give a fuck about her if she doesn't give a fuck about herself or anybody else? Why does this girl deserve my time, my patience, my sympathy, right? If she wants to kill herself, let her. All reasonable questions and responses. But luckily, you aren't the only person on planet Earth who has this disease. There happens to be people like me who understand that.
He gestures between them.
You aren't all that bad. Probably underneath all this busted-ass chaotic energy, you might even be a good kid. Who knows? And that is why we're eating pancakes on Christmas Eve, despite the fact that you don't want to get clean.
The Frank's restaurant sign gleams brightly in the darkness outside. The lights glow against the damp pavement.
You have daughters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they?
Ali stares out the window.
Different places celebrating with the families.
You see them often?
I've never declined an invitation.
Wait, but haven't you been, like, clean for 20 years?
Nah. I was clean for 7 years.
Wait, really?
Yeah, well, I had 12 years before that, but, you know, I got cocky. Started walking around thinking I was invincible. So, now I got 7 years.
Oh, shit.
Right.
Wait, how do you relapse after 12 years?
You forget how bad it is.
Damn, how long did you relapse for?
Year and a half.
Her mouth falls open.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, fuck, yeah, right.
Oh, shit. Damn, I thought you were gonna say like a day or something.
Nah. Once you get back in that cycle, you know, using and abusing, it's inescapable. Especially if you've been clean for 12 years. That's when the disease starts talking. 12 years, Martin. You ain't ever getting that far again. Ah.
Her brows cinch together as she regards him.
Wait, Martin?
Yeah.
Who's Martin?
He gestures to himself.
Martin is me.
What?
My name.
Your name is Martin?
Well, it used to be.
What?
Before I converted.
To what?
To Islam.
Ali, I'm super fucking confused right now.
What am I, your first black friend? What'd you think? I was actually from the Middle East. I'm from South Philly.
Yeah, but you just don't. You don't look like a Martin.
She smiles.
You don't.
I didn't think so either.
Do women ever convert to Islam?
She sits with her knees up to her chest as she eyes him.
Very few. Mm.
She watches him and leans her cheek against her knee, then crosses her arms.
You know, it's interesting. Because, like, it's kind of what I struggle with.
What do you mean?
DNA shit. Step one, I'm cool with. Like, you know, I can agree. You know, I'm powerless over drugs and my life is unmanageable. That's not like fucking inconceivable.
Right, right.
But it's step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That one I have some trouble with.
Oh, okay, all right, I see. Now I get it. You don't believe there's a power on Earth greater than Rue.
That's not true.
Really?
It's not true. I think there's tons of shit that is of greater power than me.
Name one.
A Mack truck. What?
Name another.
The ocean.
Try again.
Shit, I would say any song by Otis Redding is of greater power than me.
It doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Her gaze shifts as she smiles.
It does.
What?
The impact that Try a Little Tenderness had on the world is more than I could ever do.
Well,
it's more than probably any of us will ever fucking do.
All right. Little smartass. Okay, that's not gonna cut it.
She regards him, then tilts her head.
Ali, I don't believe in God.
Guess what? God doesn't give a fuck if you believe in him. He believes in you.
I don't know. That sounds good, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Of course it means something. If God didn't believe in you, you wouldn't even still be breathing.
So you're saying the reason my dad died is because God didn't believe in him?
Her eyes narrow. He looks down.
Rue, that's not what I was saying.
There's nothing that makes me angry in that fucking argument.
Hey, that's not what I was saying.
You know, because every time someone survives, like, mass shooting or some terrible fucking earthquake, they always say, you know, I survived for a reason. God saved me for a reason. I have a purpose. And then I think to myself, like, okay, well, what you're saying is that your life is more important than that six-year-old who died that day, or the newborn who died that day, or anybody fucking else who died that day. Your life has a purpose, right? Well, why does your life have a purpose and my dad's doesn't?
She gives Ali a hard, pointed look.
Because I could argue that my dad's purpose was to raise me and my sister. To be there for my mom. That was his purpose, I think.
She nods. Ali's cheek twitches.
But, you know, he's dead.
He glances up to meet her gaze.
Listen.
Ali, if you're about to tell me that he died for a reason or, you know, whatever, I will literally walk the fuck out.
I wasn't.
He didn't die to teach us a lesson, okay? He didn't die to, you know, have us all come together or whatever the fuck people tell people when they don't have anything to say. He died because he died. That's it. Same stupid reason I came out of the womb with a couple wires crossed. Right? Just fucking luck. You said it. That's it.
She shakes her head. Ali intertwines his fingers over his mouth.
Listen,
He regards her for a moment, then moves aside his plate.
I don't know all the answers, and I'm not going to pretend to. But I do know that at any given point that we're unable to see and comprehend the overall arc of human life, no person can see it. The whole chain reaction of how things come to be from beginning to end, it's a mystery and will always remain a mystery. How 6-year-old Malcolm Little's daddy was killed in a streetcar accident. Rumor was it that the Black Legion did it, the KKK. How that little boy grew up believing that this white world had no place for a black man like him, so fuck it. He moves to Harlem, becomes a pimp, becomes an addict, starts robbing and stealing till he gets locked up. Who discovers Islam? Who starts a movement? Who scares the living shit out of white America so bad that white America was so afraid that they embraced another Negro, one who had a dream not to cut the head off the snake, even if that's what they deserved, but to live in harmony. Next thing you know, Civil Rights Act. The first legislative steps granting you and I the right to sit in this motherfucking diner to have a conversation about whether or not you want to stay clean from drugs. Drugs that were given to your ancestors to keep them inebriated, inoculated, enslaved. Drugs that stripped them of their ability to not just be free, but to imagine a world in which they were free. So why is one person's purpose greater than another's? Why are some people struck down while others live? Why are you, Rue Bennett, sitting here when other 17-year-olds who are better, who are kinder, who are more respectful than you, aren't sitting here? I don't know. That's the mystery. But here we are. So what now?
She shrugs quickly.
I don't know. Maybe I'll start a revolution like Malcolm X or something.
The corner of his mouth turns up.
But haven't you heard, man? Revolutions are no longer radical.
She stares at him.
What are you talking about?
There's so many revolutions that everybody's a revolutionary. The rich, the poor, the right, the left, the young, the old, the beggars, the bankers. Man, is it beautiful. Huh? Everyone, all at once, fighting one revolution after another. I tell you, I never thought I'd see so many revolutions in my entire life. The revolutions are fought and won so damn fast that the people don't even have time to implement change because, haven't you heard, huh? There's a new revolution. I went down to buy me a new pair of kicks at the Nike store the other day, and I look up on the wall, and I see in 20-foot letters these words, "Our people matter." And I thought, man, this feels good. Here I am in my favorite shoe stores out here saying, I know you lived a long life, and I know that life ain't always been easy, but here you are at 54 years old, my brother, and I wanna say I love you. And I'm like, man, this feels good. And I'm like...
He raises his fist.
Thank you, Nike. And then I pick up a pair of these sneakers and I look at the price tag and it says $139.99. And I'm like...
He eyes his empty palm.
I thought Nike loved me, appreciated me and my life. What happened here? And I look around the store and I see a whole bunch of black people, you know, also feeling good. And I see a whole bunch of white people too, also feeling good. Some even, you know, posing. And taking pictures with the 20-foot letters on the wall. yeah, straight up. I just had this feeling. And I thought, fuck you, Nike. You don't give a fuck about anything or anyone. Chinese Muslims are sewing these Kaepernick sneakers for 7 cents an hour, and you telling me my black ass matters. Give me a fucking break. If rap music wasn't mainstream, if Nirvana was still the most popular band in America, they'd be out here saying depression matters because that's what will move sneakers. Shit. These advertisers, they're too good. Uh-huh. And they've outsmarted us. But at the same time, your generation's full of some mark-ass bitches because they've tapped into your phones. Yeah, they read your likes. They predicted your moves and trapped your asses. You think you out here fighting a revolution and Bank of America's on your side? Give me a fucking break. Because a true revolution has no allies. It's just that simple. It's a true revolution, not a fast one, not a quick one, not a fashionable one, but a real fucking revolution is at its core, spiritual. It is a complete decimation of one's priorities, beliefs, and way of living. And reconstruction in the spirit of,
He flexes his fingers and bites his lip.
You have to create a new god, or gods, or whatever you can, but it is imperative that you believe in something, something greater than yourself, all right? And it can't be the ocean, or your favorite song, and it can't be the movement, or the people, or the words.
Her brow creases as she eyes him.
You've got to believe in the poetry, because everything else in your life will fail you. Including yourself.
He nods, then leads toward her pointedly.
You hear me? That's where you are. You're sick. Your whole system's on the verge of collapse, and the addict in you is trying to sell you on the same shit that got you sick in the first place. And if you keep going the way you're going, He'll rot from the inside until you cave in and die.
He shakes his head as he gazes at her intensely.
Your only hope is a revolution. But a real fucking revolution, inside and out. But you gotta see it through. You can't half-ass this shit. You just have to commit to it every single day.
Brows drawn, her gaze flickers away.
I knew that you can always do it better and be better. Because who knows, one day you might succeed.
Her chin quivers as she blinks slowly.
I don't underestimate anyone.
He holds up cigarettes.
Stranger things have happened.
He smiles and taps the carton against the edge of the table.
Be right back. All right.
Ali slides out of their booth and ambles through the quiet diner. Rue turns her head slightly to watch him go to the door. On the other side of the glass, Ali puts on his coat as he strides into the parking lot. The light of a red neon motel sign melts into the pink vacancy sign in the puddles below his feet. Rue untangles her headphones from around her phone. She clicks open her phone to find a text from Jules that says, "I miss you." She hesitates, then presses on it to see that Jules has sent her a song called "Me in 20 Years." Smoke drifts away in a cloud as Ali lights his cigarette in the parking lot. He glances over his shoulder. Rue reaches for her earbuds. She tucks the headphones in beneath her long, curly hair, then hits play on the song. Glances outside the window, then rests her chin slowly on her crossed arms and stares into the distance. Ali makes a phone call.
Oh, hey. I didn't know you were gonna pick up. I thought I was gonna get a voicemail. I'm not trying to guilt trip you. It's just...
He grins and tips his head back to gaze upward.
It's Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Rue leans her head back against the booth.
I wonder how I'll sleep at night with a cavity by my side and nothing left to hold but pride.
She wraps her arms around her knees and stares at the ceiling.
Your sister there?
Hold out more time. Hey, me.
The fluorescent lights shine in Rue's dark eyes.
Well, tell her I tell her Merry Christmas for me. And tell her I love her. And I miss her very much.
Ali listens, then squeezes his eyes shut and shakes his head.
Do you still
I'm not trying to talk to her through Ilamani.
He waves with his hand to the side.
That's not what I was doing.
He hesitates and rolls his eyes, then nods.
Right.
He rubs between his eyebrows with his thumb. Rue watches Ali through the glass.
I'm doing good. I just came from a meeting. And now I'm standing in the parking lot. I'm just getting pancakes with a kid I sponsor.
He glances back toward the restaurant. Rue lies against the booth and peers out the window from the corner of her eye.
Hey! Who's this? Rashad? Who's this?
A huge smile spreads.
It's Papo! Papo Ali! Wait, say it again! Oh, yeah, little man! Oh, wow. Hey, what a voice he has on there, right? Wait, how tall is he about now?
Grinning, he shakes his head.
I understand. It's not a problem.
Is it laced within my DNA?
The multicolored lights outside blur against the diner's window as Rue stares into the parking lot. She hugs her knees tighter and hides her face in her arms.
I'm all right. I just feel like I'm in one of them old movies. It's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful life. Merry Christmas, Imani.
Ali hangs up the phone, then keeps his head bowed as he stands frozen. The vacancy sign glows pink against the motel staircase in front of him.
Ask me in 20 years.
Shadows cover his eyes as he stares at the motel. Rue sits with her eyes closed in the booth as Ali walks back inside. Her eyes snap open as he slips back into the booth. She coils her headphones back around her phone, then pauses to close her eyes for a moment. Ali slides down further into his seat.
Ali, what am I supposed to do about Jules?
Rue stares blankly into the distance. Ali shifts and puts his arm over the back of the booth. He turns to look behind them.
Miss Marcia.
An older waitress with a knotted headscarf taps a stack of cash and turns.
Question.
Yes.
He glances back towards Rue.
How long you been clean?
Marcia presses her lips together.
17 years, by the grace of God. 17 years. Never thought I'd be able to say that, but I say it with a lot of pride.
Ali nods as Rue puffs her cheeks out.
17 years. Why?
What would happen if you thought about dating in the early stages of you trying to get clean?
You want to know if I was interested in dating or if I was interested in getting clean? Because the answer is yes to both of those questions. But I had to not be in a relationship so that I could focus on my sobriety, because that's what I wanted, and I didn't have enough energy for both of those. And I wanted to get clean. Everything that's good to you ain't always good for you.
What do you have to say to somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of hope?
When I was a little girl growing up, my grandma used to always have this saying, and I never understood what it meant.
She pauses to lick her lips slowly.
Until I was ready to get clean. And her words were, baby, trouble don't last always. And it doesn't. If you want to make a change, that's up to you.
Rue shifts slightly in her seat.
You got any more questions for me while I'm trying to count my tips?
No, count them. I'm gonna throw a couple more in there later.
You need to with your cheap ass.
That's the truth right there.
Rue licks her lips, then moves to cross her arms over her knees. She tilts her head back and runs her hands through her hair.
You know?
Her bottom lip pouts as she stares ahead.
It's funny, when I think about it, I still blame Jules for all this shit.
Why?
She shrugs.
Because I was clean. And I was, like, gonna stay clean. And for the most part, I was pretty happy. And fucking Jules.
Wait. You were gonna stay clean?
Yeah.
With pills in your room?
I wasn't taking them.
You were saving them?
Yeah.
Even though you just said you were gonna stay clean. What? And that relapsing was Jules' fault.
Eyebrows drawn, Rue presses her lips together and glances out the window.
Ali, you don't know what she did to me.
You're right. I don't.
She stares fixedly down at the table, her lashes dark on her cheek.
She cheated on me. When I was sober, she literally cheated on me.
I didn't know that.
Exactly.
So you were in a relationship?
Yeah.
He raises his eyebrows.
I thought you two were just friends.
No.
Huh.
He glances away.
When did it shift?
The night of the carnival, she came over and we, like, kissed a bunch.
Okay, but when did it become a relationship?
She told you that night.
It became a relationship that night?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just kissing. You two talked about being together.
One weird.
What?
She makes a face.
Why would we talk about it?
Because that's how people get into relationships, Rue. They talk about it.
I mean, we said I love you a lot.
I say I love you to my barber.
She shakes her head.
Okay, yeah, but you don't make out with your barber.
Even if I did, my barber might assume it was just a casual thing.
Her shoulders lift.
We talked about getting matching tattoos on the inside of our lips.
Damn. His gaze flickers over her.
Did you?
No, but we talked about it.
He scratches his head.
Okay. Keep going.
I mean, there's nothing else to say, you know, except that I loved her. I trusted her. And when I look back at it, you know, just it's like she lied to me and manipulated me.
Right.
Like the whole thing at the train station, her trying to get me to run away with her, even though I was scared and didn't have my medication, just kind of fucked up and selfish.
She blinks as she stares into the distance, then nods to herself lightly.
I didn't think she was actually gonna go. You know, like leave me.
She meets Ali's gaze briefly, then looks down. Her forehead creases.
It just kind of set something off in my head, you know. Thinking about my whole life, how people make all these fucking promises. My mom kissing me on the forehead and telling me my dad's gonna be all right. And Jules talking about how we're gonna live together when she goes off to college and sleep in the same bed and be together forever. And then just ditches me. She met another girl. Just made me think about how everyone lies.
She raises her eyes to his.
It's not even the lies that hurt, you know? It's the fact that you're never really emotionally prepared for someone to leave you. Just kind of messed up. And it's sort of like this avalanche of shit, but maybe I deserve it. Maybe this is the universe's punishment for me being a piece of shit my entire life.
She nods to herself, then swallows. Her dark lashes flutter.
Stealing from my mom. Hitting her in the face. That's what I've done. Ali, I've hit my mom in the face.
She screws her lips to the side as her face folds into a grimace. She lifts her eyes to Ali's and regards him, then shakes her head.
I picked up a piece of glass, and I pointed at my mom, and I threatened to kill her. That is some unforgivable shit. Maybe I deserve to get my ass left at the train station at 1 a.m., you know?
Brows drawn, Ali taps his finger on the table.
Drugs change who you are as a person.
Every time I attacked my mom, I wasn't.
Drugs change who you are as a person.
Still unforgivable.
Nah, it's not.
Eyes wet, she gives him a look.
Come on.
If I actually believed that what you did was unforgivable, I wouldn't be sitting here. Because what I've done in my life is way more unforgivable.
Yeah, right, Mom.
I said it before, I'll say it again. You're playing pool with Minnesota Fats. Maybe if I was some random-ass classmate of yours with no life experience and I heard that you picked up a piece of glass and threatened your mama, I'd be like, ooh, that's unforgivable. But the more you believe that, the sicker it makes you, because every time you do something unforgivable, you think, why change? I'm just a piece of shit. I better keep going. What's the difference now? Without realizing that forgiveness is the key to change. We're too busy run around judging everybody's intentions and motivations as if we have some insight into the human soul. You know, you did this, so that must mean you're that. Just give me a break.
Ali, I picked up a piece of glass. I pointed it at my mom. And I told her I was gonna kill her.
Right?
That's fucking terrible.
But what's it mean?
She avoids his steady gaze.
It means that I'm a piece of shit.
Look deeper.
I am.
Nah. You're not. Look deeper.
Ali, that sounds like a tagline for a dumb fucking movie.
So just because it doesn't sound cool enough to you, you're gonna settle for being superficial? That's unforgivable. Look deeper. What's it mean?
That I'm violent, to someone I love.
Her lower lip trembles.
Okay, okay. Why?
Not looking up, she shakes her head softly.
Because that's who I am.
I don't know what that means.
It means I'm okay with that.
Are you?
She stares at him with wide eyes.
That's what it says.
But are you okay with that?
Her lips part slightly as she rolls her eyes.
No.
So it's not who you are?
Yeah, well, I still did it.
But why are you not okay with it?
Because it's a terrible fucking thing to do.
Why?
Because it's shitty, it's cruel, and it's mean, and my mom doesn't deserve that.
Her brows draw together.
Those are all things you believe?
Yes.
And your belief's a part of who you are?
Yes, of course.
So what you're saying is that you can simultaneously do something that you also believe is wrong.
Well, doesn't you doing it mean more than your intentions?
It all depends. Why are you ignoring all the things you believe?
Her expression freezes as she stares at him for a long moment. She shakes her head and looks down.
Because I wasn't thinking.
Okay, but that could just be the struggle of all human beings.
What?
Living up to their belief system.
Not all human beings threaten to kill their mom.
True. Yours is more extreme. I give you that. But why?
Why is it more extreme?
Yeah.
I don't know, because, like, drugs and certain emotional disorders.
You sure it's that? Not just because you're a terrible person? I mean, because it could just be because you're a piece of shit.
It's not that.
I mean, because there's a lot of people with drug issues and emotional issues that don't threaten to kill their mothers.
She licks her lips and nods.
Yeah, no, I know.
But you did. And your punishment, the sentence you've given yourself, is that you, Rue Bennett, are beyond forgiveness. That punishment is way too harsh and it's also way too easy. It allows you to keep doing exactly what you're doing without changing because you deserve it. There's no hope. You're beyond forgiveness. So you may as well just fuck the fuck off forever and go down the gutter because that's what this girl, this piece of shit, deserves. This is why the world keeps getting worse. People keep doing shit that we deem unforgivable, and in return, they decide there's no reason to change. So now you got a whole bunch of people running around who don't give a fuck about redemption. That's scary.
Her gaze grows distant as she considers. She closes her eyes.
Elliot, what have you done that's so terrible?
A lot.
Oh, what, for real?
A lot.
You're not just saying that?
Nah.
You promise.
What do you want to know?
She shrugs her shoulders lightly.
Because I think you're, like, a good person. And I just couldn't imagine you, like, doing something terrible.
Rue stares back with wide eyes. Ali considers her from across the table, then lets his gaze flicker slowly downwards. He nods to himself.
I grew up in a house where my dad used to beat on my mama. He was a drunken, cold son of a bitch. And every night I lay in bed, dreaming of every which way to kill him. But eventually my mama up and left him and took me and my sister with her, and life goes on.
He leans back in his seat.
But I always said to myself that no matter how bad shit got, whether I was shooting dope or smoking crack, I would never, ever be like my dad.
His lips part slightly as he hesitates.
And then I got married. I had two girls, and it was chaos. I was using, and my wife wasn't having it. We were fighting every night. And it got physical. And one night I looked over and I see my two little girls watching. And I thought, here I am. Grown man with two girls, and they just watched me hit their mom in the face. I spent 30 years of my life thinking of how to kill my dad for doing the same shit I just did to their mom. That's rock bottom. It doesn't get any worse than that. But hey, it took me another 5 years to clean up, because for some people, there is no rock bottom. It's bottomless. And the truth is, drugs will fundamentally change who you are as a human being. Every moral, every principle, everything you hold close to your heart and believe in will go out the window or down the drain. Because there's no force stronger on planet Earth than that next fix.
Ali points meaningfully as Rue's gaze grows distant.
Now, you may be functioning. Maybe things go well. Maybe they last. Maybe they don't. But the one thing I know is true is that the longer you do drugs, the more you're gonna lose. And not just in terms of the things you love, but the things you value about yourself. And every compromise you make, every moral line that you cross, you'll go further and further until you don't recognize who the fuck you are. And that list of racing thoughts, that list of unforgivable things, it grows longer and gets uglier. You still think I'm a good person?
Forehead creased, he observes as she raises her eyes slowly to meet his. She nods once.
Yeah.
Her eyes shine as she presses her lips together. Ali nods and shifts back. His chin quivers.
The thought of maybe being a good person is what keeps me trying to be a good person.
He shakes his head, then pauses as he stares into the distance.
Although, some people might disagree with you.
He licks his lips and glances out the window.
My youngest daughter, for one.
What's her name?
Ali blinks quickly. A muscle in his right cheek jumps.
Marie.
He smiles and nods lightly. Rue stares at the table with heavily lidded, encircled eyes. Her chin shudders as she opens her mouth to speak, then hesitates.
Ali? I just don't really plan on being here that long. And that's the tough part about all this, you know? Because I love talking to you. I do. And I agree with almost everything you're saying. And I understand it. I just don't plan on being here that long.
Ali's gaze grows distant as he stares at her, then turns away. His eyes shift back and forth.
I get it. We're living in dark times. Not a lot of hope out there.
He glances out the window. He shakes his head and looks down.
The thing I miss about doing drugs.
Smiling, he raises an eyebrow as he peers at her.
Is the beauty. No matter what's going on in the world, no matter what's going on in your life, everything is gonna be okay.
He grins at her, then blinks and lowers his head as his smile slowly fades. Rue stares straight ahead.
Yeah. The world's just really fucking ugly, you know? It's really fucking ugly and,
Her lips twitch to one side.
Everybody seems to be okay with it, you know. The anger. The level of anger.
She shakes her head slowly.
Everyone's just out to make everyone else not seem human. And I don't really want to be a part of it. I don't even want to witness it.
Brow creased, she gazes at Ali with large dark eyes. She glances downwards.
I'm sure it's not like the root of all my problems, but I definitely think about it a lot.
Because thinking about those questions, those ideas, they're a large part of what makes this life worth living.
Smiling slightly, he nods and points to her.
Right. That's what I was talking about earlier.
He leans across the table.
You gotta believe in the poetry. The value of two people sitting in a diner on Christmas Eve. Talking about life, addiction, loss.
He lets his gaze linger on her.
You don't want to be a part of it, Rue, because you care about the big things in life.
A tear glitters in the corner of her eye.
I don't know if I care about the big things in life.
Come on, of course you do. You obviously don't care about the small things, like being right, or being angry. All the things that kill curiosity and keeps us all from looking deeper.
He stares at her intensely, then looks at the table.
You said it earlier.
Nodding, his gaze shifts as he bites his lip.
I love talking to you. Because we talk about the real shit. Shit that matters. Like, who do you want to be when you leave this earth?
Her eyes swim with tears.
I'm not really sure I follow.
You said you weren't going to be here much longer. Okay, then?
He keeps his eyes on her fixedly as he shakes his head.
How do you want your mom and sister to remember you?
The fluorescent lights glow warmly against her face from above as she gazes back at him. She blinks quickly as her expression crumples. The corners of her lips pull down as her chin trembles. She licks a tear off her top lip as it trickles down.
As someone who tried really hard to be someone I couldn't.
A tear spills from her eye as Ali reaches over to hold her hand. A small smile curls at the edge of his lips as he gazes at her.
I got faith in you.
Why?
He shakes his head gently.
I don't know. I just do.
He smiles at her steadily, the dino lights bright in his eyes.
Granted, I was a Christian before I became a Muslim, so I've been wrong before.
Thanks.
She smiles and glances at him. Eyes shining, Rue pushes herself upright in her seat and blinks away tears. She looks away. She peeks at Ali from the corner of her eye. Rue rises as Ali grabs his coat out of the booth. He pulls his scarf around his neck. Rain pours onto Ali's pickup truck as they climb inside. The truck's headlights glare against the scratched and smudged window of the diner as Ali backs out of his parking spot. Ali drives them slowly out of the lot. The neon lights drift across the white paint in the darkness. Diner sits hunched with his head in his hand. Through the glass, Ali's truck pulls onto the road and drives away. The wipers push the heavy rain off the windshield in long sweeps. Bruce sits in the passenger seat and looks out the front. Body rocks gently with the movement of the car around her. An air freshener jingles with a crystal chain on the rearview mirror. Ave Maria. Rue gazes straight ahead, her eyes lined with dark circles. The street lights glow gold through the side window.
Thank you.
lights around her blur into darkness. Brightly by her cheek. Expression blank, Rue stares ahead steadily. A title appears over black, a series of close lines tinged with blues and purples, Euphoria. Directed by Sam Levinson. Written by Sam Levinson. Created by Sam Levinson. Credits continue. Depicted in this motion picture are fictional. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental and unintentional. Copyright 2020 Home Box Office Incorporated. All rights reserved. First publication of this motion picture, sound recording and film, United States of America 2020. Home Box Office Incorporated is the owner of the copyright in this motion picture. This motion picture is protected by the copyright laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, copying, or use of all or part of this motion picture may result in civil liability and or criminal prosecution in accordance with applicable laws. In text, The Reasonable Bunch. Blurred letters intersect. A24. A black and white drawing of a lamb. Little lamb. Planted letters appear. Dream Crew. ADD Content Agency. HOT. TCDY Productions. Presentation of Home Box Office. Audio description created by Point360. Written by Betty Capot and narrated by Kathleen Finn.